All right. Well, this morning we're continuing in our study of the confession, which begins in, or we're studying right now, paragraph 24 of the Civil Magistrate. And if you recall, last week we took the time to cover paragraphs 1 and 2, which primarily the foundations of government and authority generally and government specifically. This week, then, I wanted to go on to talk about what is our duty towards governors and those who are in authority over us. So when we think about that, that's really the reverse side of authority is submission. And so like last week when we started talking about the authority which a governor has, we started talking about authority in general. This week, I want to start talking about submission and submission in general, and then we will come to the particulars of that as it relates to government. So as I was discussing this and thinking about this, it seemed to me that the category of submission is, again, a fairly broad category, and I thought it would be helpful to make sure I linger over that long enough that we understand something of it. So if we don't get to all of my points today, we'll continue this in one more week. But the three things that I want to look at for this section: what is submission generally? That's number one. Two, what submission is due to governments particularly? And then three, what are the limits of submission, the submission that is both due and the submission that is appropriate? That is, there is things that we must submit in, and then there are things we are free to submit in, and both of those have their limits. So we want to look at that. So first, what is submission generally? And that's where we're going to spend the bulk of our time here today, if we can. We'll see how this goes. Now, our primary source text, as we have in view the submission that is due to governing authorities, Romans 13, of course, is our central text. And so I'm going to read this for us, even though I don't intend to get to the full exposition this week that I had originally thought we might attempt. So we'll save that for one more week. But still, let's read this and keep in mind the first verse as it starts out. So Romans chapter 13 and verse 1, "Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval. For he is God's servant for your good. But if you are doing wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. Therefore, one must be in subjection, not only to avoid God's wrath, but also for the sake of conscience. For because of this, you also pay taxes for the authorities and ministers of God attending to this very thing. Pay to all what is owed to them, taxes to whom taxes are owed, revenue to whom revenue is owed, respect to whom respect is owed, honor to whom honor is owed." Now, you'll notice that both at the beginning and the end of this paragraph, this instruction by the Apostle Paul to the Roman church, we see this word, submission, or to be subject to. Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, and therefore, it says, therefore, let one must be in subjection, not only to avoid God's wrath, but also for the sake of conscience. So, we want to ask the question, what is submission? What does submission look like? And as we begin this study, I want to couch what we're about to do in some qualifying terms, because as we think about submission, we can look up what the term means in, you know, dictionary style and define it and then apply it. But the reality is that what submission looks like in its particular context has a lot to do with who you're submitting to and what authority that person has. Submission is the reverse of authority. It is what is due to the one who has authority over someone else. And so with that in mind, we must first understand something of the authority that is there so we might understand the submission that is due. To give an illustration, if we are to be subject to Jesus Christ, even as he was subject to the Father, we understand this subjectivity, our submission to Christ, our submission to his word, comes without qualification, without distinction, without qualms. We are to submit ourselves to Christ wholly, totally, in all things, for everything, period. Why is that? Well, because his authority is absolute in all things. He governs perfectly. His authority is one that cannot be questioned. Therefore, the type of submission that is due is then different. Now we think of the authority of perhaps a boss at work, or a parent, or a governor, and we say all of these authorities are given by God, but they're given for a particular end, to rule in a particular place in a particular way, and they are people, they are sinners. And so any authority that they have requires a certain submission, but that submission must be understood in light of the authority that God has given and the submission that is due from us primarily to God. So with that caveat out of the way then, as we attempt to look at this, I want to first look at submission, not first and foremost as the act of obeying, though we'll get to that, but first and foremost as the blessing. What is the blessing of submission? And I start here, and I made reference to this last week. I'm working through Lehman's book on authority, and he has some helpful chapters in there as well on submission. And it's very helpful that he does not spend the majority of his time qualifying submission and talking about the limits of submission and how submission is a necessary evil, but he spends nearly all of his time talking about the blessing of submitting to an authority and stated by God. And in doing this, I hope to show you that our entire thinking about submission can be better shaped. We'll be able to submit better in the ways that God requires us when we first understand that submission is a good thing and a blessed thing given by God, just as authority was a blessed thing. Recall how we turned to 2 Samuel chapter 23 and we read this famous text from the last words of David last week, where he says, "The God of Israel has spoken, the Rock of Israel has said to me, when one rules justly over men, ruling in the fear of God, he dawns on them like the morning light, like the sun shining forth on a cloudless morning, like rain that makes grass to sprout from the earth." And we reflected on authority is given as a blessing, as much a blessing as the sun is to the earth and the rain to the earth that brings forth its fruit, so also this authority that one, when one rules in the fear of the Lord, it dawns on men in that way. But how does it dawn? Doubtless, it can only dawn with this blessing when one is subject to that authority. And so to receive this blessing, to take this blessing that God gives, is to submit to that authority that God gives. And so, thinking about the blessing of submission, I want to point out a few things. And first off, as we just said, submission is that channel of authority's blessing. Are you to have the blessing of having an authority? Then you must also submit to that authority. We all must submit to that authority if we are to have the blessing of that authority. And I'm going to try to sprinkle this in with tangibles as we go along so that it's not just hypothetical, but we could think of, as we're leaning towards, the submission that is due to governors. But would you like the blessing of having a civil society where evildoers are punished and where the society functions well because there's common trust? Well, we must then submit to that authority if we're to have that blessing. Outside of that submission, we are also walking outside of that blessing. Or for children, how about this? Would you like to have the blessing of having good mothers and fathers that tell you what is good for you and keep you from danger, keep you from hurting yourself, and prepare you for the life ahead? Well, if you would like to have that kind of blessing from God, then you must be subject. You must submit to your mom and dad and be trained by them. Think of the submission that Jesus spoke of when he went to his disciples. What did he say to them? He said, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. Follow me, and I will make you." Now, this, as we think about authority being the blessing of submission being the channel of authority's blessing, Notice how Jesus goes to his disciples and asks or commands for submission, but with that submission comes a promise, or he puts out in front of them a blessing. You will become this. You will become fishers of men. You submit to me and I will make you something. And so we see that submission is, to put it in our author's words, it is the channel of receiving. It is the path to growth, authority, and likeness to God. It's the path to growth, authority, and likeness to God. Would you grow in maturity, and would you desire to have authority, to learn to exercise authority, just like God gave authority to Adam to tend and to keep? Would you like to be one in authority, to exercise a good authority? Well, you must first submit. Would you like to become like God, more and more into the image of Christ in the proper way? Then we must also submit to Christ. So the blessing of submission is that we develop, we grow, we receive more and more authority as we grow in that submission, and we become more and more like God. Practically, we could think of some other examples in the scriptures. Think of Joseph. When he submitted himself to Potiphar, Potiphar entrusted him with more and more until Joseph rose to the point where he had authority over all the house of Potiphar. And with this came much, not only much blessing for the people in preparing for the famine, but Joseph himself was a man of great standing, of great status. This came through first the submission that Joseph showed to his master. Think of it in another way, though. Think of how Psalm 119 speaks of the Word of God. Psalm 119 talks about the Word of God in ways that sound like this. You could flip anywhere, and I'm actually going to flip to Psalm 19 first, but in Psalm 19 and in Psalm 119, as the psalmist reflects on the law of God, he uses language where he's always talking about the blessing of submission to that law. When keeping the law of God, there is great reward, as Psalm 19 says. The precepts of the Lord, starting in verse 8, are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The rules of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, even much fine gold, sweeter also than honey and drippings of the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is your servant warned. In keeping them, there is great reward. Now, if we think about that, the psalmist is not talking about the law of God up there sitting on the shelf as he says these things. Look how beautiful it is from afar, and look how nice it is over there. But the psalmist is talking about the law of God. When I am keeping it, it is that which keeps me from harm. It's what warns your servant. It's where I find much joy. It's more to be desired than fine gold. So the blessing of the law of God even comes through submission to the law of God. So that's the paradigm we're working with. Submission is a blessing that is given to us. Submission is the channel of authority's blessing, and authority is given to us for growth and for maturing into the image of God. Now, with that in mind, with the attitude of I want authority's blessing, I want the blessing that is found through submission, what does submission look like? So we're going to move on from the blessing of submission to the act of submission. The act of submission, then, we could oftentimes, maybe you've heard it said, let me restart. Many times, when we hear the word submission, we get scared because we think submission means obey. And I would not stand up here and tell you that submission does not certainly include obedience. But I want us to see that there is something else going on with submission than mere and simple obedience. The author in this book, Lehman, helpfully defines this act as involving two things, right? First, it's deferring by moral constraint to another person's judgment. So you're going to defer to someone else's judgment. And then it is deploying your resources in behalf of that those ends, pursuing those ends, using what you have to pursue the judgment that another one has made. So I want to pick that apart. But the first thing I want to notice is that submission has to do with deferring to someone's judgment willfully. It's our choice to defer to someone's judgment. It's an act of our own our own agency. It's an act of our own agency to defer and to submit in that way. There's a type of submission that certainly happens at knife point or at gunpoint, but this kind of submission is not the kind of submission we're talking about here today. That's not the kind of submission that, at least if persisted in, leads to the kind of growth and blessing we're talking about. That's the kind of submission, ultimately, that is required of you by force. But the kind of submission we're talking about here is submission that is due by moral constraint. That is, you're compelled by the internal, your conscience is compelled to submit your judgments to the judgments of another and say, I recognize the wisdom and the blessing that is here in following this authority. I'm going to consciously and willfully submit to that authority. But here's where I want to hopefully put some pieces together, and I think I'm going to do a really poor job at it, but I'm actually kind of, I'm kind of passionate about this type of understanding about submission. So bear with me just for a moment. If we're thinking about submission as the channel by which God's authority the blessing of God's authority is given to us through that channel of submission, and if submission is that which leads us to growth, that ought to help us understand what this submission looks like, or what this deferral looks like. If we think about it in terms of an example that this author gives, I think it will be helpful. He says, quote, "It's like learning to swing a golf club. The first time you pick up a golf club and swing it, your arms, shoulders, and hips will swing the club in a gangly and awkward fashion. But what happens when you submit your body to a golf pro's instruction? Little by little, your arms, shoulders, and hips will move more naturally. So it is with deferring to parents' judgment. By submitting, the child learns to exercise her conscience, desires, and the decision-making faculties in a better, self-controlled, moral, and neighbor-loving fashion." So what I'm driving at is, do you want to be someone who makes good judgments, where your faculties are trained to discern right from wrong, where you have the agency to make good judgments and to practice godly, God-fearing living? Well, look for a godly, God-fearing authority to submit to. But submission has that aim in mind. It means it has the aim of being trained, of being built up, of thriving in mind. So, to put a period in this, if I can, if we think of this kind of submission merely in terms of, well, whatever he says, that's going to happen, I need not think about it, I need not take responsibility for my moral actions, I need not consider the weight of it, yay or nay, I merely cast off all of my duties of moral agency and put it on that authority, and I become the robot, there is no training, there is no benefit, there is no excelling, there is no growth in the one who is submitting. But in so much as you look at that authority and you say, okay, this authority is upon me, how might I train and be conformed and be better? Well, to do that, you must take in mind what the person is saying. So let me give an example. There's different types of authority, and some come with a certain transcendence, right? God's authority over man is transcendent, and some come with a particular type of immanence. That is, a husband and wife, there's sort of an imminent relation there where there's really no room for dictatorial oversight, overstatement, which says act pure and simple and turn your mind off, right? So, but let's look about it, think about it in terms of parental authority as a child grows. When a child is young, that's much more, it's often much closer to sort of imminent authority. Eat your potatoes. Why? Because I'm your dad, eat your potatoes, right? Do you expect in that moment for the child to reason through why they need the potatoes in balance with all the other dietary needs on their plate and why they must do it in this moment and not, and all those things? No, it's just eat your potatoes. But as that child grows, especially into teenage years, our command as parents to that child must be different. We must give them commands, say, do this because this is why. And the reason I say you must give whys is because you're training that child to make those judgments for themselves in the days to come. So that child, to be rightly trained by it, ought to be interested in the why, ought to be persuaded of the why. If you say to the 13-year-old, or let's say you say to the 15-and-a-half-year-old who's chomping at the bit to get the keys to the car and drive, and you say, I don't think it's right or good for you to have full rein to a car right now. I may take you to get a license or to learn, but I'm not going to give you full authority over the keys because, and you state the reasons, it will be a distraction to your school. It may distract from other things. You don't have the discernment that is proper to know when and how far you can drive the vehicle, something like this. And the child is taking that in and saying, okay, I want to be shaped and trained by this authority and learn to think like dad thinks on this issue. I want to think like dad thinks. The reason why that is so important is because when it comes to submission, and submission across the board, whether that's submission of wife to husband, or parent to child, or civilian to authority, or anything like this, when it comes to this kind of submission, in relation to the nature of that authority, we ought to be thinking of growth and maturity under that authority in a way that we're taking moral agency for the action done, where we're thinking, okay, persuade me of this. You want this to happen in the home? Okay, think, help me understand why. Help me see why this is good, because right now I don't see that as good, and I don't want this. He gives another example here, and I want to read this. My friend Jeff, a pastor and college professor, described the strength of his wife with his own battlefield reinforcement story. He was using the illustration of a battlefield as part of this kind of deploying of resources. We'll get to that. Jeff was midway through a PhD in Old Testament. After a couple of discouraging years, he reached the end of himself and decided to quit. He announced it to his wife, Angela. Her response, quote, "The children and I have followed you to this school. We have given ourselves to trusting you. You need to finish it." She reminded him of his obligation to provide for his family, to follow through on his commitments. Jeff then summarized the moral of the story. He asked, "Would you say that she was submitting?" "You bet she was. And it commends her strength. She drew me out. She helped me be the man I could never be by myself, the best possible man I could be." And he gives this example of the type of submission then. This type of submission, not the submission that says, "I will never ask any questions. I will only be a robot and do that does." This kind of submission, notice, let me lay the groundwork for this then. So Angela in this story had submitted. She had went with the family, moved the family over so that Jeff could pursue ministry, right? Now, if she had never been persuaded that Jeff should be in ministry, if she had never really thought that this was his calling, and if she had never really been on board, the moment Jeff changed his mind and said, "You know what, I quit, I give up," she would have said, "Okay, whatever, we'll quit and give up." But she had been persuaded of his leadership. She had been persuaded that this was right for him to do, and she had been persuaded that this is good for the thriving of the family. So then when Jeff feels discouraged and says, "I'm going to quit," she stands her ground and says, "No, I'm submitting to your authority because you have set a direction and this is good." Do you see how she had imbibed, she had submitted in a way that trained her own discernment so that when Jeff needed that support, she was there. Now, similarly then, this act of deferring by moral constraint is about growing in our submission to that authority. And so, in ways that are appropriate, whenever we are called to submit, we must ask ourselves, how is this inculcating or training or building me up? Can I rightfully cast this vote just because I want to follow whatever the leader says? Or do I actually believe that this is the right thing to do? Have I actually been persuaded that this is right and true and beneficial? An example that, as Rachel and I were talking about this in the car yesterday, and I'm going to point this more towards government now, I was thinking about the submission that is due to governments, and he goes on to talk about it's not just deferring then to the judgment, but it's deploying resources towards the same ends, right? So in Angela's story, she deployed her resources because she helped pick up the family, move the family, provide the family. She deployed all her energy in that persuasion, in that submission. Similarly, in government, in what we read in Romans chapter 13, let everyone be submit in subjection to the governing authorities, pay your taxes, right? That is, government is set there for particular ends, for human flourishing, for punishing evildoers. Therefore, employ your resources. Don't just submit out of necessity, but actually go forward and use what God has given you towards the end that government has been appointed. And as I thought about that, I realized, and Rachel helped me see, you know, all my life I've imbibed this attitude of taxes are that which you do only because you have to. It's that necessary evil of society. And so anywhere that you can cut your corners, if you can kind of do it in a good conscience, do it. And not that many years ago, I remember selling a car, and I sold it to my brother, and I thought, the government has no business sticking their hands in between a sale between me and my brother. So I falsified on the legal sale of the car. Now, everyone will tell you this happens everywhere. Everyone does this. But the reality is that in that moment, I did not submit to the authority as I ought to, because what I could have done is realized that government is here for a particular end. God has given us government for thriving, for developing, for protecting, and therefore the government is due its funds. Do I agree that I should be able to benefit from the authority of government? Should I be able to benefit from police officers and benefit from law enforcement agencies, fire chiefs, and all these things? Sure. Maybe my kids aren't even in school, but I agree that it is better to have an educated population than an uneducated one. And I agree that it is better for society as a whole. If I want my children to grow up into a society that is good, where there is work to be done and people are being productive with their lives, then I want the education system to succeed. And with those things in mind, then I can submit, but in submitting, I don't only lose money, but I actually gain the moral judgments that are necessary and good for being a good citizen, for employing my resources toward the end of seeing humanity flourish. Now, we all know there are complications with that. What happens when government wants you to use your money to fund abortion clinics or to fund any other ideology, and it gets difficult and messy to think through some of those things. But the point I'm driving home then is that the blessing of submission, the act of deferring by moral constraint, not by force, but by moral constraint, and then deploying those resources to the same ends, all of those things work together so that we ought to not think of submission as something which is primarily scary or dehumanizing, but as something which is God-given for the growth and development of people, and specifically into the image of His Son. So all of this, though, must fly under the umbrella of that ultimate submission, of course, because the ultimate submission that we owe is due to God alone. It is God's authority alone that we submit to. When a child submits to a parent, they ought to grow to learn that that submission is actually an act of submission to God. When we submit to governors, we do not submit to the person themselves intrinsically, but we submit to their office as the authority, as they are the office holder of an authority that God has given. So all submission flows upward and toward the one who created the world. And so we ought to ask ourselves, what authority has God given in whatever question you're... What authority does government have? And to whom am I supposed to give this submission? How far must I or may I go in submission is another question. How far can I go in submitting myself to understand this authority structure? How far must I not go? Because this goes beyond this would ask me to rebel against God in order to submit. And how, specifically, how can I be trained or formed by this submission? So with that in mind, I guess we'll just stop and kind of ask for some conversation or thoughts in the last 5 minutes, because to wrap this up, I'm going to turn next week, Lord willing, maybe 2 weeks from now, whenever we come to it, Lord willing, to Romans 13 and actually try to exposit that text specifically to government and look at what our duties are toward government to try to wrap up this paragraph, looking at understanding when is it appropriate to disobey, because that's what's always in our mind, but more importantly, how far can we go in submission and still maintain our integrity before God and rejoice in the authority that God has given. Thoughts on submission, generally, then, or questions? Sort of a flurry there. Yeah, brother.
I just think it's helpful to think about the blessing of submission. Even when I think about like my kids at school when they're disobedient, that they're disobedient because they don't see the blessing of being in school is good for them, helpful for them.
Yeah.
When they're disobedient, they don't get the blessing of what I'm trying to teach them. So I think just thinking about how disobedience often come out of that understanding the blessing behind why
this
is good for you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're welcome. It's helpful for me. I think even as I thought about this week, right, the temptation to cut corners at work on your work from home day is not submission and also develops habits of laziness and, you know, change. It's not forming you as a person in the way that God would have you be formed, right? So you're missing out on those blessings from God when we fail to submit. Yeah. Yeah.
It made me think a little bit about the encouragement that those who are in authority need, because they're not perfect at executing all authority like God is. Mm-hmm. So then the temptation sometimes when it's hard, even as a parent, to execute authority, the little things are to be weary or feel like giving up, but just when you know it's the right thing to do, that whether it's police officers or not, it's encouraging them in the little things, because otherwise to just feel like I'm going to give up on that particular little aspect of authority. But it might be important. It made me think of Luke,
yeah,
where Jesus is talking about those who are going to be entrusted with more. If you're not faithful with the little things, right, that example of it starts with the little of the submission and the authority and the importance and prominence of it, because it's through that channel of the blessings and everything aspects of that.
Right.
It'll flourish. Then the authority would be delegated even more.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good, brother. And that reminds me kind of that flip side, right? Those in authority then ought to realize that the type of submission I want is not the brainless submission, but is the formative kind of submission, right? I want to inculcate the attitude of making sure that, you know, questions can be asked and truth can be sought, you know, under that umbrella of submission, so that you can actually be whatever persuaded of the reason, of the logic, of the purpose for this type of obedience, you know. So, but yeah, the encouragement side that you're talking about is really helpful. Yeah, brother. Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good question. I think the good news is we actually have some time to answer that, because the way that the confession is set up, we're talking about government now. We talk about marriage in the next chapter, and we're talking about the church and its authority in the next chapter. So in each of those spheres, we're going to be coming back to the same kind of questions. What does submission look like in those contexts and that sort of thing? So I think we can get more particular as we go. So for today, I'll just say, I think the key to unlocking a lot of that is understanding what authority has been given by God and for what realm and what purpose, right? Like, who has the authority? What is the end of that authority? And what, so that, because by tracing those lines, you see, okay, my submission is due to God for this governor, but just to give a silly example, right? If the government all of a sudden required that every person wear a blue bow in their hair, right? Well, you're certainly free to do so. It doesn't contradict the word of God, right? But if the government does so in a way that has absolutely no bearing on human flourishing, it's literally just authority for authority's sake, right? It's tyrannical. Then when you see through that, you realize, okay, this government has taken the authority that God has given it for flourishing and protection and all these things, and now is just using it for something completely other. So then when you go to make the decision, am I going to wear a bow or not, you're going to make a conscious decision of how am I submitting to God? Am I doing this even though I'm free not to, or am I going to not do this because I am free not to, right? So anyway, I just kind of put that there as like a, hopefully we can dig into that a little bit, but I think it primarily looks at what is the authority that God has given and for what ends. Lord, we ask that you would teach us, help us, and help me and all of us here to be in better, more thorough, more thoughtful, more deliberate subjection to the authorities that you have given to us. This is your ordained means for growth and for not only society, but for homes, and for vocations, and for displaying your glory in the world. And Lord, give us discernment. We recognize that all authority has been given by you, and you have never given authority to anyone to command sin. You have never given authority to anyone to do something outside and beyond your will. So I ask that you would give us hearts that are eager to submit and help us to be discerning so that we might not grow or be trained or inculcate in our own habits of mind things which are sinful in the eyes of God. Thank you for your word. In your name, amen.